Bone-chilling greetings, everyone. The tunes are courtesy of the phenomenal Bobby Mackey, and I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow.
Now today it's a different place, all the same with a new face, with strange mysteries hanging in the air. People in their sane minds swear they see you today. Are you looking for the love they took away? Everyone knows that you couldn't buy the pain, so you took your life in the pouring rain.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers Podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift, whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from the East Coast to the West Coast, from tiny village to big city, from scorching hot desert to tropical paradise and everything in between. It is greatly appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout-out goes to
Jalapa, Mexico, Midlothian, Virginia, Zárate, Argentina, La Plata, Maryland, Frederiksberg, Denmark, and Westbrook, Maine. Today I will continue the Reign of Horror Vampire Serial Killer series, and I will be talking about two Polish serial killers today in part 5. First up is a serial rapist and killer. Probably going to butcher the name, but who cares? He's not worthy of me pronouncing it right. He's a Polish serial killer named Tadeusz Enstein, better known as the Vampire of Lowix. Now, I wish I could say that he was a planned birth by a loving mother and father who welcomed him in the family and simply adored the dickens out of him. Maybe if that were the case, things may have been different for this dude. But no. His mother, she was sadly and most unfortunately at the wrong place at the wrong time, and she found herself in a horrifying situation that nobody should find themselves in. And the end result, she is raped by a Russian soldier at the end of the First World War, and he is born because of that rape. So at a very young age, his mother abandons him. She turns him over to an orphanage, which, as a young teen, he would escape the orphanage and would go on to be arrested at least a couple of times for riding trains without tickets. Nothing too serious, obviously, but sadly, things escalate, and that soon changes. He was not very educated, as the last grade that he completed was only the third grade. He would upgrade to murder when he moved to the small, cozy, agricultural town of Lowix. Now, his reign of terror lasted just a few short months, but to the locals, it must have felt like an eternity. He would murder at least 7 women starting in February of 1933, and up till his capture in July that very same year. His murders were sloppy, frenzied, and angry. He would mutilate his victims. The murder count could have been higher, but thankfully at least 3 known victims survived the brutal assaults on their lives. He would admit to the murders, but during the murder trial, he recants his confession and tries to point the finger at some poor innocent person, like a desperate flea-ridden dog being backed into the corner. That's his only defense. In mid-February, he claims the life of his first known victim, a young local woman, luring her into the forest, claiming to want to sell her some books. Now, FYI, he was an actual bookseller, so why not believe him? Maybe it's kind of weird to meet up in the middle of a forest, but whatever. And once in the forest and out of the public eye, he proceeds to beat her over the head with an iron peg, knocking her out. And while she's unconscious, he does rape her. And with a knife, he then proceeds to slash at her face several times. He puts the deceased woman in a shallow grave, and then he just wipes his hands from it, calls it a day. Now, thankfully, her family, they would get answers quickly as where her location is, as she is just discovered the very next day. He repeats this brutal assault several times. His victims, they were all young women, living honest lives. His victims ranged in the ages between 18 years old to 35 years. Tad Azuz was a necrophiliac, as most of his victims, he would sexually abuse their corpses, or he would end up raping them, like I mentioned earlier, when they're knocked out and can't do anything about it. It's now June, and his most recent victim was a 28-year-old woman who had just lost her husband. Who killed this beloved widow? The locals were terrified. Who was killing all of these women? And why make it where they were unrecognizable due to the mutilated faces? The newspapers screamed headlines like, "The vampire strikes again!" Young women were most likely thinking, "Am I next?" Or maybe concerned it may be somebody that they know, the next victim. With this vicious predator roaming and lurking about, it was definitely terrifying times for sure. And after this final murder, he knew the net was closing in on him, and he makes his escape. But he can't help himself, and he claims what would be his final victim. Now, at some point, this serial killer, he becomes acquainted with two young teenagers. It's believed that they thought this adult man could get them alcoholic beverages at a wedding that they were attending, a social event that may be a little easier to get away with that sort of thing. So they invite him to come with them. Now, maybe it was the booze, perhaps it was the carefree atmosphere, people laughing, happily dancing, having a grand time, celebrating true love. Whatever it was, this sealed the serial killer's fate. He felt at enough ease and comfort to just kind of start talking about the crimes that he had committed. Like, seriously, why would people want to hear about this anytime, but especially at a happy occasion like a wedding?
"She looks so beautiful in that dress, it brings a tear to my eye. Oh, they make such a lovely couple. Oh, hey, I murdered a woman earlier today."
Yeah, no way, dude. But it's a really good thing he opened his big mouth and bragged, though, because several people were around and heard his confessions. And concerned people, they alert the proper authorities, thank God. And like a scene out of a good old West movie, he's being transferred by train when an angry mob consisting of over 200 angry people try to nab him so they can lynch him for his crimes. But they are unsuccessful in their attempt. Express.co.uk talks about the sentencing. On August 23, 1934, the court convicted him on 7 counts of murder and 3 of rape, sentencing him to 15 years hard labor in a state prison, plus a 10-year suspension of civic rights. No death penalty was sought, reflecting Poland's penal code emphasis on rehabilitation for young offenders. His imprisonment was brief. Official records indicate he died around 1934, likely from illness such as tuberculosis, common in overcrowded facilities at the age of 21 years old. Exact circumstances remain undocumented, with some historians speculating suicide amid isolation, unquote. Now, to me, that's just crazy. It's like rehabilitation for young offenders. Okay, but when the young offender is a serial killer, you bend the rules a little bit. Or that should just be a completely different category, right? It's not like he stole a package of gum at 7-Eleven or something. No, he claimed the lives of at least 7 women. And he raped at least 3 women who were successful in getting away from him and surviving. That's a lot of victims. You know, that just doesn't sound like much justice to me. If his murder trial took place in August of 1934 and he died that same year, that means he just did a few weeks or months of jail time. No good. The next monster I will talk about is Ferdinand Groning, a Polish serial killer and pedophile known as the Lodz Vampire. During the interwar, Ferdinand would claim the lives of at least three young children. As a child, he was quiet and reserved, often referred to by many as a loner. He grew up in a home with five siblings, two of them dying in infancy. And as he grew older, the shyness wore off of him, and this aggressive behavior takes the place of the shyness. He was a mean son to his parents, and he was just a horrible brother to his surviving siblings, often threatening them and grinding his teeth like some crazed, untamed beast ready to strike at its prey. Ferdinand was a sick individual, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He was obsessed with sex, and he got it any way he could. He didn't think twice to force himself onto others. And just a straight-up vile human being. All pedophiles are. He was arrested at least one time for the rape of a young child, but did not spend much time in jail for that heinous crime. Now, unlike the other vampire serial killers I have talked about, this one, he differentiates in the fact that he claimed a life, was arrested and sentenced for that murder, and then he would be released where he had the opportunity to graduate into a serial killer. Because he was released, more innocent children would meet brutal ends. In 1926, Groning commits his very first murder, a 7-year-old girl named Irena. He brutally rapes her, then takes her life. He casts suspicion immediately, and he's arrested. His sentence is life imprisonment. But unfortunately, 6 years later, that sentence would change to a puny 12-year sentence. And believe it or not, this sex-crazed pedophile and child killer would be released a couple of short years later. How do you go from a life sentence to an insulting 8-year sentence? I mean, that just utterly blows my mind. It's disgusting. It's a miscarriage in the justice system. Now, in 1934, the same year he was released and given a second chance, Groning just cannot help his demented self, and he finds a small group of boys playing football. He chooses one to his liking, and he approaches the child and offers the little boy candy.
It's just a little bit in the distance, but if you come with me, you'll get candy out of this.
Well, the boy must have been street smart, or at least was told by mommy and daddy, do not go to stranger dangers who lurk nearby, promising the sweet taste of candy. The child, thankfully, says no. The predator targets another child in the same group, an 11-year-old boy named Joseph. And he excitedly says, yes, I'll take that candy. Well, this is the last time the child is seen alive, walking away with that stranger danger. He does not come home for dinner, and his worried family, they search for him. Now, unfortunately, it would take 6 weeks by the time little Joseph was discovered. The child was reduced to basically a skeleton, but identification was possible, as the small little skeleton had a hat on, that child's hat, and it even had his name sewn onto the hat. Now, Ferdinand, he is apprehended, but not for the murders, mind you, but something completely unrelated. And he spends 2 years locked up for that, but he is released again in 1938, where he finds himself a free man, free to kill again. Now, shortly after his release, he sexually assaults at least one child. But thankfully, unlike some of his other victims, she survives. Same year, still in 1938, mind you, he claims the life of a 9-year-old girl. Again, this monster just cannot help himself. His final murder, that of the 9-year-old girl, he is caught red-handed. Literally. He had the blood of the child on him. Her father questions him when she goes missing, but he claims to know nothing.
Who, me? I'm innocent as a lamb. I don't know what you're talking about, mister.
He is seen cleaning what may very well be the murder weapon when an officer catches him. And at the police station, he admits to killing this little girl. and he reveals where he buried her. The authorities go, and they find her. They come upon this eerie sight. Her little tiny hand is found sticking out from the earth. He had dismembered her. They even found body parts right next to where he slept. Just truly disturbing. He probably thought,
hey, I can admit to the murder. And hey, I might do a few years, but then I'll be out again to kill again. Because hey, it happened once. Why not?
I mean, can you imagine if he had served that life sentence in the first place? These children would still be alive. I mean, they could have lived into adulthood. And the one girl who survived but was brutally raped would not have gone through such a nightmare. Yes, a miscarriage of justice indeed. Unfortunately, the serial killer's fate remains unknown. He was sentenced to death, but as this was happening, so was World War II. It was in its infancy. So there's no proof that he was executed. There's nothing to say that he rotted in prison. We could only speculate at this point, and that sucks. It's nice when it's like, okay, he did this crime, he murdered these people, he got his sentence, he served that sentence, he was executed, and whatever. Bob's your uncle. No, have no idea what happened to the dude. So what makes someone go from normal to a bloodthirsty killer, ready to take a life at any given moment? Thinking it's okay or normal to murder someone, snuffing the life out of someone, like it's okay or normal, like going to the grocery store. Just another normal day for them. Scary monsters do roam the earth. Monsters in disguise.
That concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others. They are all phenomenal. Haven't heard every single one yet? No need to lose any sleep over it. You could hit up any of those spooky podcast platforms such as Spotify, Blueberry, Deezer, Castbox, Downcast, Player FM. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and
I will see you next week.